AI, is there anything it can't do? Grab a beer and join us, because we're talking about big brain stuff today, way bitter than my stomach on all you can eat night.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 3 of the Project Flux podcast. Absolute pleasure to be here again with my co-host Yoshi. And today we're very excited to have Mohamed Ashour on the show with us to talk all about what's been happening in the world of AI and data analytics in the world of project delivery. So before we get stuck into the episode, and as usual, there's absolutely loads to talk about, I just wanted to remind people, please, please hit the subscribe button or the follow button on this podcast to make sure you get an episode, this weekly episode, delivered to your mailbox every week. And also don't forget about our newsletter. You can subscribe to the newsletter. The link is going to be in the show notes to the podcast. If you subscribe to the newsletter, the Project Flux newsletter, you'll also get the newsletter, which has got a lot more than just what we talk about in the podcast, delivered to your inbox every single Monday. Also, one final call out from a big event we have on this coming Wednesday. We've got the Project Data Analytics Task Force meetup at Leaders' offices on Wednesday night. That's Wednesday the 17th, where we'll be talking about the IPA government AI in government project delivery paper. We have Karina Singh from the IPA, along with Andy Murray from the Project Data Analytics Task Force and the Major Products Association. It's sure to be a great night. But don't worry if you can't make it, or if indeed the event has sold out, because it's very close to selling out. We will be doing a special podcast from the event, having some interviews with people, talking about what's going on. So look out for that as a special podcast coming up soon. So that's all the introductions out of the way. Now let's get stuck into the show. So today we're going to start off by talking to Mohamed. Welcome, Mo. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, James, for that. And thanks for that amazing opportunity to be on your show.
No, well, as I, you know, when I started planning this, you were one of the very first people I thought of. I was lucky enough to meet Mo at one of the hackathons, the project hacks that are put on by Projecting Success. And we struck up a good friendship since then, and been keeping tabs on what each other's doing. And, you know, it's really good to be able to have a discussion with you on this show about, firstly, what you're up to, and then also your thoughts on some of the big news stories that have happened this week. So, firstly, I just wanted to, you know, as a bit of an introduction, you know, tell us a little bit about yourself. I mean, how you got involved in data and AI, because I understand your background is as a QS, so I'm just interested, because I went through a similar path myself. You know, how did you make that transition from quantity surveyor to AI data analytics expert?
So basically my background is civil engineering and basically construction and engineering management, and then QSing was part of the journey itself. And I was doing lots of coding using Visual Basic under Excel, which is a programming language, as you know, under the Microsoft products. So I have been doing that for the last 13 years of my life. So my journey in data, or my introduction to data, is not new. And when I started with in the QSing journey, as a traditional QS, I was doing lots of, you know, templates and codes to make my line of work. And when I got to know Microsoft Power BI and all of the amazing visualization tools by Microsoft and other companies, I learned how to delve deeper into databases and the likes, and do relational, you know, tables and all of the amazing bits and pieces. And then definitely with Projecting Success, as you know, we have both done the apprenticeship with Projecting Success. It was an eye-opener. And my role now is basically focusing on providing insights to different clients and doing digital transformation and how to take traditional QSing to the next level.
And before I ask you the next question, I do realize I actually didn't give your bio. So I just like to read this out before I kind of delve a bit deeper, because it's quite important for people to understand a little bit about your background. So you're a principal consultant in digital transformation, specializing in major project cost intelligence for projects in the UK and abroad. you're affiliated with both the RICS, as I am, and the MBCS. You are founder of APC Mastery Path, which we will talk about a bit later, which is all about mentoring and teaching for the APC and showcasing AI applications and constructions. And as you just talked about, you've got this expertise in data analytics, machine learning, AI, Power BI, Python, and really emphasizing that integration between efficiency and governance in various projects. So one thing I picked up there from that introduction is, you know, you kind of started experimenting with these tools. What was that first kind of aha moment where you realized, wow, this stuff is really going to be a game changer for the profession and for what I do?
I think the availability of the open source, off the shelf tools, mm-hmm. Where you can download a large language model locally on your machine. It doesn't require any sort of like fancy machine. Any machine can do the job. And then you can use documents locally taking into account the confidentiality and the likes. And you can ask documents about some bits and pieces, and they can provide really good responses. And also, if you can download locally large language models, then the next thing would be create an agent locally. And it's along the lines of automating the line of work or the workflow.
What do you mean by an agent? Just for those people listening in thinking, well, what's an agent? Is that a person in a bottle somewhere?
So an agent, according to what I've read, understood and applied, is you write some code, you download a large language model locally, and you specify a specific task to an agent, and the agent does that task using that downloaded large language model to provide an output. You can have multiple agents that can be working together either in parallel or in series to achieve a greater task. And it's kind of like you're trying to build an organization, but instead of using human beings, you're using code.
Yeah, and that sounds scary. And that was your first kind of aha moment, was it? What about things like you talked about your proficiency in Power BI? Do you still think there's a place for Power BI? Or do you think even dashboards are becoming like a little bit passé now in the industry?
I think you're correct. Starting from November last year, Microsoft, they have really revealed Microsoft Copilot for enterprises or for business. And I've seen November last year that using a semantic model, or basically using a prompt, and you have a data model in the background, writing that prompt can create the whole of the dashboard for you. So the whole of the front end, all the measures in Power BI, everything done and dusted in a matter of minutes. So I think, as you said, it's going to be a thing of the past within maybe the upcoming year or so.
And that's the interesting thing, isn't it? And we've talked about this a couple of times on the pod, is that the rate of change means that you can't rest on your laurels. You know, you can learn Power BI already. We've got code to do that. You know, now people are learning large language models. You know, and what's next, I guess, is the question.
True.
But it's going to be an interesting journey.
Yeah, that's correct. 100%. Learning large language models now is, I wouldn't say it's a must, but it's a nice to have, I think, for the next couple of years. But then after 2 to 3 years, it will be a must for all project professionals, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Just on the theme of, you know, this kind of transformation that's happening with the use of these AI tools, what do you think the real opportunities are for our profession in project delivery? If you were to sort of say the top two or three real opportunities for us.
So if you're thinking strategically, you can think about automating a huge number of tasks that you're doing within your firm. So getting rid of all of the redundant steps or approval steps, if you're thinking strategically. And then if you're thinking with respect to product delivery, there are a lot of them opportunities, such as, you know, what has been done with M-Plan, which is automating the program creation. I've also worked on an initiative, which is automation of the BOQ codification in accordance with your desired method of measurement. One of them things that I've already discovered as well and started working on is developing, or basically a QS can develop a design on their own, or a 3D model using IFC files. So now you can prompt Microsoft Copilot to provide for you an IFC file. And IFC, for the audience, it's an industry foundation class. And it's the way that different 3D modeling software speak to one another. So yourself as a QS, you can write a prompt, you can ask ChatGPT or Copilot, could you please write that down into a Python code? Mm-hmm. And Python is a programming language for the audience sake. And then you can take that code into an integrated development environment, you put it and then hit run, and then you have an IFC file on that. So you have a design in a couple of minutes.
And is that something that you've done? Have you experimented?
I have experimented it today, and it's really, I'm not going to say scary, but it's really fun. I've used it with a house, three-story house, literally typed, I need a rough 3D model for a three-story house.
Yeah.
And it created the code itself, and there are IFC viewers available online free of charge, and I think I've spoken in the previous podcast about how DALL-E can help architects. I think it might not be DALL-E helping architects, but I think large language modeling producing IFC files, that's going to be the spot on thing, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, if you can send the link to some of those IFC viewers, we'll put those in the show notes as well. And it's funny you should say that about DALL-E and architects, because we did discuss that last week, didn't we, Yoshi, in terms of how that's going to change things. So
we came to the same conclusion, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
What about the risks then? Because, you know, we've used the word scary quite a few times. We're only on to episode 3, and I think we must use the word scary at least 10 times in the course of this this season. So what do you think the risks are?
So one of the risks that I'm beginning to feel myself is depleting the creativity. So your creativity might be reduced a lot if you relied too much on AI tools. Another thing is not just the creativity, the way to think. Sometimes you let the AI do the thinking for you, which is a little bit unpleasant, because mm-hmm. if you look at it from a broader perspective, you need to think, you need to tell the AI what to do. You need to have your superiority over the AI tool. And also sometimes you feel that people are not putting the prompt or the prompting together in a correct manner. So sometimes you give access to people and then they develop things that they think they are good, but in fact, it's not that good. Sometimes when the tool is accessed by a lot of people, sometimes the end result might not be great, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I've definitely seen that. It's like, oh, well, I'll just get ChatGPT to do it or whatever tool it is. And you scratch the surface and you realize they've just done it. They haven't checked it. And this is the danger.
True.
It's exactly that. You know, you're handing off creativity. But more importantly than that, you're handing off that kind of that natural thing that happens when you do it yourself, which is you check it as you go along. Let's say you're right, you know, whether you're designing a building, doing a bit of quantities or writing a song, doesn't really matter. If you're doing it yourself, you're naturally checking it. Whereas if you let a tool do it, there is that kind of, I suppose, human nature just to be lazy and say, right, that looks all right, I'll get it out. And, you know, I've done it myself, you know, I've done something and, you know, maybe put something in, done an email and then read it back and said, oh, I should have checked that a bit more, really. So
true.
It's an interesting. Just before we go into the news then, just tell us a little bit about APC Mastery Path, because I've been following with interest since you've launched, and it looks like a really important initiative for those people looking to do their RICS APC. So tell us a bit about it, mate.
So for me, APC Mastery Path is some sort of like a side hustle. What I do is I try to provide bespoke teaching and mentoring services for the RICS APC candidates, whether they are going through the associate route or they are senior professionals. And what I've seen is that a lot of people, they provide, I would say, mediocre service. And I think here in the UK, a lot of people can provide very good service, if I'm being honest, but elsewhere they can provide mediocre level of service. And I am a chartered professional myself, so I think I can excel in that market and I can provide service. And as you know, we've spoken about working on the side on developing this kind of fine-tuned large language models, and then a platform could be created for candidates, whether it's paid or for free or whatever.
Does it help with the preparing for the interview and the questions and answers that you'll be given by the assessors? Does it just deal with the submission itself?
When it comes to helping with the questions for the interview, I have used a couple of them documents developed by the RSCS themselves, which contain, I think, quite close to 440 titles in all of them areas of competence. I've put them in one of them Excel sheets, and I've put it on my website. So I've done this kind of subjective, based on my opinion, subjective way of assessing where you're sat in, when it comes to studying. And if you used them two tools, the fine-tuned large language model and that Excel sheet with the radar chart, you will then know roughly where you're sat, if you're going to nail it, or if you need more time to study.
Amazing. And it's so interesting just to hear the different ways that AI is being kind of deployed. And that's just another use case that, you know, probably no one had thought of, say, a year ago. And there you go.
True.
Creating something, adding value. So thanks, Mo. Right, let's move on to the news. Again, and I said this last week, but it is absolutely true. There's so many stories. I am having to edit these as we go. So I want to touch on sort of four or five stories today. This by no means covers everything. And as I said, please just download the newsletter from the show notes link to get the rest. But the main story was a really interesting one that I saw from expert.ai, where they did this survey and they were looking at the pain points for data teams. Now, it's really important for people in project delivery to understand the pain points that data teams in your organization are facing, because it's a very real challenge we got at the moment. And what I thought was interesting about this is that 96% of people said that the biggest pain point was delivering business impact, and this is the crucial word, now through AI. So that's almost all of the people surveyed said that this was a problem. And the thing that I took away from that was that word now. So I think people are expecting this immediate impact from AI, and there's a kind of level of patience that's gone down. Any thoughts around that, guys?
So I think the word AI is a buzzword at the time being, and it's a little bit of a hype. AI can take lots of shapes and forms. One of the things that I keep telling clients is that you have to define what are your end goals, because for argument's sake, as we have all seen in Projecting Success during our apprenticeship, the amazing HR team within Projecting Success, they have used the Microsoft Power platform to undertake robotic process automation. So instead of taking months and months and months of doing some tasks, they have used the Microsoft Power platform to nail it. And that is a form of AI. So because if you use the Microsoft Power platform in your organization, that is a form of AI. So what AI are you speaking about?
Exactly.
Not yourself, James, but normally, generally.
Well, no, it's a good point. You know, when any of us say AI, what does it mean? It's, and this 96%, are they expecting, would that tick their box, you know, a kind of Microsoft Power Platform, or are they expecting more kind of large language models? So what do you think, Yoshi?
Yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head when you mentioned the word now. I think because of AI, businesses are trying to move quickly. So it's high expectations to be able to deliver and use AI for quick and tangible benefits now, amidst some of these technical complexities, right? And then because a lot of our work, a lot of our workflows are quite old and we're still working without AI, we've got the challenge of integrating that within our workflows. So I think there's a level of complexity, but we're looking for superficial wins currently because we thought we can do with it.
And I think there's this element of FOMO as well, isn't there? Where people, you know, there's a lot of bluster where people say they're doing AI, everything's AI powered, but when you scratch the surface, it's not there. So I think there's a lot of people saying, well, I need to jump on that bandwagon and I want this kind of business impact now through AI, whereas actually you've got to get the fundamentals right first. Understanding the AI culture, understanding, as you were talking about, Mo, you know, the kind of that data literacy. And I think it's a real challenge for data teams everywhere, is that sort of tempering people's expectations a little bit.
Exactly, yeah. One of the things that I've been expected that, because, you know, I'm doing different sorts of, you know, digging into AI, large language modeling and the likes, I was expected some time ago that you provide me with a PDF, whatever quality it is, and then I, out of nowhere, I'm going to provide you with a decent Excel sheet or a database. And Sometimes this can be done, sometimes not. So as you said, just managing the expectations of clients and firms about what is the art of the possible at the time being, I think that is key, 100%.
Yeah, and I think it actually goes quite hand in hand with the third one on the list, which was at 91%, which was about managing unstructured language data, which, you know, you can't have one without the other, right? So
true. And
yeah,
there is one example. Sorry, you should go on. Go on.
So yes, I was going to say they're slightly overlapping, right? Because the pain points delivering businesses impact now through AI, but their pain points getting it through data security, right? And managing unstructured language data. So because of those problems, you're having troubles in delivering benefits with AI now, right? So there is overlap between all these different pain points.
They all overlap. Yeah, absolutely. And then the other one that caught my attention was the one at the bottom there, which was slightly less, 81%, but still fundamental, because that one says AI understanding, trust and explainability. And I think we all struggle with, you know, people who are immersed in this field, like the three of us are, have all struggled with that to some degree in terms of explaining to people what AI is and what it means and what it is and what it isn't. Have you experienced that at all, man?
Yeah, 100%. Last year, I was having lots of conversation with the talk board about leading the way when it comes to implementation. So I had to explain what is the art of the possible. Mm. What are the tools, the available tools in the UK or in the market, and how companies can implement them alongside the investment required, because a lot of the top management, they might not be delving deeper into AI or digging deeper, so they would expect that you out of nowhere, using a very 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 basic laptop, you would create, you know, like amazing solutions, when in fact you'll have to invest lots of thousands of pounds to create just normal solutions using AI.
So, yeah. I think the key thing is patience on both sides, from the people immersed in this like us, having patience with people who want, and then the people who, you know, the kind of in the domain, the project managers and QSs, having patience with the data team, understanding that it's quite a tricky job that they've got to try and go through this. But let's move on to the next story, which was from, I found it on the BBC News website, but it was about Microsoft announcing new AI offices in the UK, which I thought was extremely significant, because obviously it's great news for the British economy, but it's, you know, Microsoft, as if they're always around the most valuable company in the world, but having that confidence to invest in the UK, I thought was great. And they talk in the article about the level of talent in the UK, and I keep reiterating this, that we should be quite proud in the UK that next to the US and China, we're the third biggest investors in this economy, and stories like this just kind of back it up. It gives it credence in a lot of ways. So what do you think about that, guys? Do you think that it's obviously good news, but do you think, how significant is it?
I think it can open the doors to having new roles in the market. So you can have, because Microsoft, I'm pretty certain that they will try to enter new, not just new markets, but new portfolios, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm, so yeah. I think they can be recruiting people just to be prompt engineers. And these prompt engineers can be, you know, like they can be seconded to different companies. They can also recruit people to be working in how to implement large language models in finance. And these people don't need to be, you know, like senior software development engineers, if that makes sense, or senior software developers. So I think I think that can open the door to lots of new roles, which are going to be basically joining or marrying the tech to the non-tech industries. If that makes sense.
That's really, so what we're saying is, yes, you know, AI is going to take away some traditional roles, but they're going to be replaced by these new roles, right?
Yeah.
So there's hope, you know, and this is the thing with all these things. Yeah, there's good things that come out of them and bad things, and inevitably there's going to be some changes in workflows and job descriptions. But at the same time, as you say, there's going to be these new opportunities that come out there. Yoshi, they talk about one of the reasons Microsoft have cited as being why they've invested in the UK is this UK safety first mindset. How important do you think that has been?
I think it's very important. I think this comes after Michelle Dunlan, Secretary of Innovation, Science and Tech, signed an agreement with America, right, to collaborate on testing of advanced AI and evaluating the safety of it. So I think there's a clear indication that the UK are focusing on ethical AI and good practice with AI, and I think that's a significant part of it. But also, Mustafa Solomon is also from London, UK, right?
Okay.
So there's a level of connection with the UK, and in amongst the attraction to the UK, there's AI talent wars, right? We know that, and this scoop initially of getting DeepMind co-founder Mustafa Solomon into the position with Microsoft is a big statement. So there's the AI safety first approach for the UK, but also the AI talent wars, right? And I think it's who can get ahead the most, which is getting a lot of that traction.
Yeah, it feels like Microsoft are playing all the right cards. I mean, obviously they had a huge disappointment, a couple of decades ago when they didn't really leverage the mobile wars that were hotting up.
True.
And, you know, that really affected the company. But it does feel like with their acquisition or partnership with OpenAI, they're really getting this right. They seem to be the industry leaders in it. And I think everyone's playing catch up to them in terms of the way they're going about it. Would you agree, Mo?
Yes, definitely. And my take on it is, I faced this with a number of them clients, is that clients or companies, they would need to change their view on who is leading AI roles or AI projects. They don't necessarily need to fit into the conventional managerial, background or the profile. They don't need to fit in the classic manager profile. Sometimes you would need a person who is in the deep end of science and analytics to lead your AI programs or AI projects. So yeah, I think
what I found really cool, James, was that so they mentioned that they're looking for exceptional talent,
I
was thinking about exceptional talent, and I thought to myself, okay, what do you need to work for OpenAI? So I did a quick I looked at their site, and it's very interesting, right?
So they mentioned,
you have to be AGI focused, right? Anything that doesn't help with AGI is out of scope.
Before you go on AGI, just explain for the listeners what AGI is.
I think I'll let you explain that, Jane. You're the professional at this part.
Okay. AGI is artificial general intelligence. In other words, when machines become as smart as humans, scary prospects, but this is what they're all effectively working towards. So a bit of a sidebar there. Back to you, Yoshi.
Yeah, and then they mentioned as well, so intense and scrappy, right? Building something exceptional requires hard work, urgency, and everything that we choose to do is important. And there's got loads of other things, right? But it's really interesting because when it comes to the application process, I thought to myself, how would I get a job at OpenAI? And I thought they pride themselves in delivering state-of-the-art AI models. So why don't I just get ChatGPT to write the whole process for me, right? It's got to be right. I should get pretty far.
Yeah, you could say that. Well, you don't trust your own model.
Yeah, exactly.
It is interesting. The last bit on this article that was astounding to me, it mentions that AI is going to contribute £3.7 billion to the UK economy. I mean, as a percentage, that's significant enough, and presumably that's just going to go up and up and up. So I think the UK is getting itself in a great position in terms of being a leader in this field. Obviously, we're not, we're close behind America and China, but that's quite a good place to be. So I think they've got it quite right with where they're going with the whole AI strategy. So moving on to the next one, and it's still on the OpenAI theme, but it's also Meta have announced this. And this is a little bit more abstract, I guess, but there's a few articles or kind of noise being made that both OpenAI and Meta, who own Facebook and have got a model called Llama, which we'll talk about again a bit later, are experimenting with models that have reasoning in it. So this is kind of the next generation of models and starting to mimic human behavior more. So when I say to reason, that means it to be able to plan and to have some kind of memory. We know that ChatGPT has released a memory feature, but it feels like they're all looking at this next iteration, and it is a path towards AGI, making it slightly more human. And it's all a bit vague. There's no kind of formal announcements, but there's definitely quite a lot of noise that these things are coming, whether that's going to be ChatGPT 5, whether it's Llama 3, I don't know. Mo, what do you think?
I think they have spoken about it when Claude was when Opus 3, which is developed by Claude.ai, was issued. I think they have used some sort of like a multi-step reasoning technique where you try to explain a specific problem using a narrative, and that narrative is in bullet points or basically mini scenarios, and these mini scenarios are compiled together to form a larger problem or a larger scenario. And I think they began comparing the latest and greatest ChatGPT for one of the variants. I forgot the number of it or the variant name, and with the latest Opus 3 from Claude. And I think that's where they said, okay, they are beginning to do reasoning for lengthy problems or lengthy issues. But definitely, as you said, it's a quite an important step towards artificial general intelligence.
And from a sort of project delivery, project management, QS kind of point of view, how could that, you know, let's say they get this kind of reasoning algorithm, how would that help someone practically in the workplace?
So there are a lot of them companies now that are trying to develop new initiatives for bid writing. I think one of them is called Loopio. Loopio is one of them. Yeah, one of them companies who are using an API for GPT for to write bid documents and the like. So I think for reasoning, you can break down a bid situation into a number of mini situations or mini scenarios, and then you can explain these mini scenarios to whatever large language model that you're going to be using, whether it's Gemini from Google or you know, ChatGPT-4 or the likes, and then maybe use all of the mini responses as part of a larger response to a specific client.
Okay, so it's like the next iteration of the use of these large language models. I mean, it's definitely, you know, working towards this AGI. And in the article that I read, there was kind of a difference of opinion, with some people saying, you know, this is all, it's nothing more than an illusion. It's still based on this kind of large language models that creates this illusion. What this person says is a mirage of reasoning. And then you've got someone called Jeffrey Hinton, who's one of the godfathers of AI, who takes the other view, which is to expect AGI as within the next few years. So even within the field, there's a huge difference of opinion as to whether this is just kind of something which is pretending to be and feeling like a human rather than doing human tasks, compared to those who say this is actually doing human-like things. What do you think, Josh?
Yeah, I think it's with AI, the thoughts that it has is not reflective or introspective, right? But they're rather outputs based on programming, right? And kind of parameters and predefined frameworks. Now, James, you mentioned that there's a form of memory within ChatGPT, right? Yeah. Now, I think what this refers to is our working memory, right? So our ability to plan and reason, solve problems, all comes from our working memory. And AI has a level of reasoning that we've mentioned, okay? So it's got inductive reasoning. But one thing it struggles with that humans have, to be more specific, is this abductive reasoning, right? So it's the ability to make logical inferences without a lot of context or information. Now, we know that with AI, they use a lot of data on large data sets, and it can form an answer, right? It can extrapolate response. But that's where I think it struggles, is the ability it lacks holistic, intuitive, and contextual aware capabilities that humans currently have. And I think that's a key point. And I kind of relate it back to Kahneman's thinking, right? So Daniel Kahneman, with his systems one and systems two thinking, is humans have the systems one thinking, which is quick, fast, automated, output driven, which is where your current capabilities of AI is at the moment. But I would say that now the next step to reach AGI is a systems two thinking, which is deliberate and logical, which is a lot more, which can be slower. But one thing that I just want to touch on, James, is that I did see research. Sorry, go on.
Do you think that's where these new iterations of these tools are going, to this level two thinking?
Yes, I think it's edging towards level two thinking. And another thing that I would like to mention is that I saw these researchers implemented in a monologue to AI. So rather than it's delivering outputs, it would think before speaking using a technique called Quiet Star. And in this research, they found that the AI models had much better common sense, and it doubled their math performance. Now, there are hints that within ChatGPT-5, there might be this level of in a monologue, right? So letting the AI iteratively reason using a chain of thought, self-verification, searching and planning. How they implement that, I don't know. But this is looking to be something which comes within ChatGPT, sorry, GPT-5 and Llama 3 potentially.
About Llama 3, there was also an announcement from Meta that Llama 3 is coming in the next few months.
Yeah.
Mo, I know you've done some work with Llama. Can you just explain what Llama is for the listeners and why it's different from some of the other models in terms of its open source capabilities?
So, as some of the audience might know, there are open source models and there are closed source models. So there is a website, it's a French company called The Hugging Face. So The Hugging Face website is home to quite close to 150,000 open source large language models. The Llama model is one of them open source models that is developed by Meta, and it's pushed to the Hugging Face website for people to download and play with. You have to request it from the Hugging Face. I think you have to fill a form that it's not going to be used commercially. It's just going to be used for research purposes. The beauty of it is that you can build a lot from it, but again, it's not available under the Apache 2.0 license, which allows the usage of open source large language models commercially. So I've built with Llama 2 a lot of chatbots that can query your documents locally on your machine, and then they can give you very valuable insights. So there are lots of variants.
Well, why is that important, that it's the fact that it's on your machine, that gives greater security, I'm guessing?
It gives a lot of, it has various points. So the first one is, as you said, it gives a lot of security, because once you download the model, you can cut off the internet and do whatever you please with it. The second thing is it gives you a lot of flexibility, because off-the-shelf solutions and closed-source models, you are tied up in the ecosystem provided. But if you have the model downloaded on your machine, you can tweak it the way you want. You can fine-tune it for a specific task or a specific line of tasks, and you can build agents with it, or dependent on that model, and do whatever you're pleased with it.
And do you think this new version that's coming out, because I know it came in for a little bit of criticism, Llama 2, from it not being potentially as powerful as some of as the Microsoft ones or the Google ones, do you think this Llama 3 model is going to sort of get it up there to the same performance as its peers?
I think it's dependent on what variant of the Llama you are referring to, because Llama on the Hugging Face website offers a lot of them variants. And what I mean by variant is how many parameters are there in the model, because you can think roughly about the model as some sort of like a matrix, N by M by X, Y, Z dimensions. So they say that some models has, you know, like 2 billion parameters or 7 billion parameters or 13 billion. So I think Llama had quite a lot of variants, starting from 2 billion parameter models, which can be used on, you know, very basic laptops, going to the 7 billion parameters and then 13 and then 30 billion parameters, which have to be used on, you know, like workstations and server-based computers. So depending on the variant, I think Llama 2 was doing great, but with the variants 13 billion parameters and above, not the ones below 13 billion, as you said.
So there's different flavors of Llama, is what you're saying. But
yes, true.
Yeah, well, case of wait and see. And I think just before we go on to the last story, the interesting thing that I took from that is one of the things that a lot of people get very scared about is that when you start using these models, say ChatGPT, that you're training the model on your data. So, you know, that's going into the big system. Whereas if it's on, presumably, Mo, if it's on your, if you're using Llama and it's on your own system, you're not it's not going into any kind of big machine anywhere. It's staying local. Or is that not the case?
True. It is staying local, as you said, and there are open source, if you want to just experiment large language models for, you know, like for recreationally or some sort of like recreation tasks, just, you know, to understand them, you can download some of them solutions like GPT for All or LM Studio.
What are the hardware requirements like for running a local large language model?
So off-the-shelf solutions like GPT for All, they allow the usage of your CPU. So you can deploy, you know, the small large language models on even your MacBook Air M1 because I have that one set in my house, and I use it from time to time. It's a little bit slow, but it's fit for that purpose. And these solutions like LM Studio and GPT for All and anything LLM, the more or the higher the specs, the more tasks can be done. So, yeah. But again, you can use a basic laptop, you know, the one which is like 500 quid or so.
Right, just running out of time a bit. I did want to touch on, we always try and talk about a new tool or a new piece of kit that's been offered to the industry. And the one I wanted to talk about today was Construct AI. Again, all this will go in the show notes. I know you haven't had a chance to log on, Mo, but Yoshi, you have. So I'd like your opinion on it, because I had to play around with Construct AI, and it's basically a fine-tuned model based for the UK construction industry, trained on loads of kind of construction related material. And what I found interesting was that it was also multilingual, and they seem to have done, there's obviously an initial release, but my initial play around with it, I've been quite impressed with what it can provide. And there's obviously quite a lot of work that's gone into the fine tuning of that model. What do you think?
Yeah, it seemed thorough. It gave quantitative figures as well. So I was asking it for some potential, what are some popular emerging trends within MMC, so modern methods of construction, and it kind of listed those quite well. It was detailed, it kind of gave compound annual growth rate, so it pulls data from many different sources, including market intelligence, which I quite liked. There were some word limits, but I think that might have been from the free version that I used. It was an easy to use interface.
I think there's a free version, a paid version, and an enterprise version.
Yeah, and with me initially, I couldn't get it on the laptop, but it worked well on the mobile. So I would say it's quite a good tool, really. And I think if it's providing contextual insights into the construction industry, and there's a free version to use, I say definitely try it out, because it was quite coherent.
Yeah, and I think it's invite only, so you've got to kind of log in and ask to go on the waiting list, which might be why you weren't able to get on, mate. But it's worth persevering with, and you know, we'll try and get the guys onto the show in one podcast to talk about their tool. So if you're listening in, get in contact, and we'll get you on the Project Flux podcast. But again, we'll put it in the show notes so you can all have a bit of a play around with it. And that, everyone, we could go on for a long, long time, but we're going to draw the pod to a close.
Dave, before you finish, one more thing. You didn't touch on the quote of the newsletter, but I'd like to pick one up from you that you mentioned today, and you said there are different flavors of llamas, which is a little quote from yourself.
Well, that will hopefully go down in the annals history as one of the great bits of wisdom. Never forget that. So on that bombshell, as they say. But before we go, actually, just any final words from you, Yoshi?
No, nothing. I'd just like to just mention, I think the idea of implementing or potentially implementing some form of step close to AGI with reasoning and an inner monologue is fascinating, because it really closely mimics human behaviour, and it gets us that one step closer.
Brilliant. And Mo, thank you so much for coming on. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. We hope that you come on again in the near future. And good luck with all the endeavours with that APC Mastery class. Any final words from you?
I wish to thank you so much, James and Yoshi, and thanks so much for that opportunity to be on your podcast. It has been quite useful and insightful, as always. And, yeah, quite looking forward to meeting you both on Wednesday.
Excellent. And as I said at the beginning, don't worry if you can't make it to Wednesday. There will be a special pod. We might even get a few words from you, Mo, on there when I walk around with my portable recorder. But final word from me is really, don't forget to subscribe to this podcast to make sure that you get it direct to your inbox or player, whatever you choose to use, whether that's Apple or Spotify. And don't forget to subscribe to the newsletter as well. But on that note, we'll bid you all farewell for this week, and we'll see you again next week for the Project Flux podcast. Bye-bye, everyone.